Welcome to Amazon Legends, where we have real stories about making it big on Amazon. Our guests are CEOs of large companies and entrepreneurs who became power sellers. Also providers specializing in helping sellers, aggregators that acquire sellers, and former Amazonians will give us an insight from behind the scenes. Here is your host, Nick Urison.
Welcome to another episode of Amazon Legends. And my next guest today spent many years in omnichannel agencies. And when he identified the need for managing paid media, he became the founder and also head of digital strategy of Garanski Food and Beverage, which is a paid media agency for food, beverage, and CPG companies. So this is the kind of guy who goes, figures out something, then he sees how badly it is being done and he decides to start a business out of it. So it's the perfect entrepreneurial approach. And when he's not working, he likes hockey and also his one-year-old daughter. And I'm hoping not in that order. So with that, everybody, meet my guest, Kevin Garanski. Welcome back to the show, Kevin.
That was a tremendous introduction. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, you know, when you and I talked and I asked you, tell me about yourself. And then you told me all about, you know, how you did this and how you spent time and then found, I thought, you know, this guy is a natural entrepreneur because usually people just curse at it and then just keep the job because they want the check, right?
That's true.
Yeah. So, okay. So paid media means growing sales. And of course, growing sales does not happen blind. So what we're going to talk about is something that you've become an expert at. And that is taking business away from your competition.
Right.
And also capture market share. And we're not talking about just, you know, some small operation. We're talking about really growing market share by taking business away from your competition. So what is your methodology in doing that? Because it's a difficult task.
Yeah. Well, first of all, food and beverage is a beast. So on all the other platforms that we advertise on outside of Amazon and within Amazon, food and beverage is very difficult. So I think my favorite thing about Amazon in comparison to the other platforms, it's the most apparent what your competitors and the bigger brands are actually doing, right? So some of these other platforms that we advertise on, you know, we could see some of the ads they're running. We could see how they set things up on their website. But we can't see everything, which in my opinion, you could see on Amazon. So, you know, within Amazon too, there's certain parameters and, you know, there's a ceiling in terms of what you could actually do with it. So what we like to do and what we start with brands, you know, when we audit them or when we're first speaking to them is we say, who do you want to be? And it could be anybody, and it's always going to be kind of like a conglomerate size Nabisco owns, you know, Coca-Cola owned brand. Obviously, you're not them now, but like, you know, what is your North Star wish of where you wish your brand would go? And that's going to set the basis and kind of determine, you know, what are they doing that we aren't doing, or what do we have that they don't have that people are seeking? So we see that a lot. In food and beverage. And like I said, we can directly look at the competitors. We could see what their listings have. We could see what kind of content they have in their listing. What are they putting in their header? Do they have specific benefits or ingredients or diets that they're including that we also abide by that we don't have in ours? And then two, I think just like, you know, brand voice, tone, you know, how are they portraying themselves? What does their imagery look like? They have influencer videos, they have explainers. If it's a recipe brand, are they putting recipes on Amazon? If it's a recipe brand, are they pushing, you know, the recipe and, you know, that their product abides to the most? So it for us, that's the first place that we start. It's who do you want to be? What can we take from them? What do we have that they don't have? The next one that's a second tier to that. So it's kind of like a 1B in my opinion. It's equally as important, but it comes second. It's going to be, who do you think you should be taking sales from? Or who do you think your competitors should be buying your product instead of the competitor's product, right? That's the easier one for me in terms of we could actually test that. So we'll actually require brands to give us a list of 5 to 15 competitor products that they think there's no way that people shouldn't be buying their product instead of theirs. We'll immediately test a competitor or a conquesting campaign based on those ASINs. We'll see the results, and then we'll take those top competitors that they told us they should be stealing sales from. We'll move them into a manual campaign where we hyper focus on them. And then really, you know, to me in food and beverage, it's the easiest way to scale sales, right? Because it's somebody already looking for a product that they know about that product. Maybe they're not sold on it. We introduce our product to them. They like your product better. You know, boom, now they're a consumer of your product.
So you look at the North Star company that is the leader to model your operation after, and then you turn around, you look at the secondary competition that you feel that you are as good as them, except that they have more sales than you. So who are those people? And then you target them to take away sales from them.
Right.
And divert it to you. So those two, and then of course, what you're doing in the process is you are testing, right? You're testing against the secondary. So you don't go after all of them at the same time. You are testing one at a time, and you are checking to see what you are going to achieve with that test. And then you then turn around and devise the strategy based on the test results to scale.
Correct.
Okay.
So I think a really good example, you know, in food and beverage, and I think, you know, any other consumer outside of food and beverage can get this reference, and coming fresh off the Super Bowl, you have, let's say you're like a probiotic soda kind of drink, which is really hot beverage right now. Again, Poppi just did a huge advertisement. You know, it's one of the first emerging brands that I've kind of seen come up from really small to doing a Super Bowl commercial. To me, you know, if I'm a probiotic, prebiotic drink, whatever it is, that would be your 1A, right? They're huge. They're about to get bought for millions and millions, maybe billions of dollars. That would be who you want to be. And now within that space of probiotic, prebiotic drinks, you have tons of competitors that have popped up, you know, the past 5 to 10 years. I want you to pick 5 to 15 of those brands that have popped up that you, as a business owner who owns a prebiotic, probiotic drink, is saying, how are people buying that and not buying us, right? And then we're really putting it to the test and telling you like, hey, you know, you were right. We are stealing sales. And I say stealing because it is showing up on their listing, right? Or when they're searching the product from them. Or, you know, the ones that they might have felt strongly about that they should be stealing those sales from and aren't, then you kind of do that process again of what you did from the who you want to be, and you start taking pieces from them and implementing that in your listings, implementing that in your pricing and so on.
So, okay. So I want to set up this conversation for our listeners so that they know what they're going to get in this episode. So I believe that you're going to share a lot of information with us that people can just take away at the end of the episode and just apply in their operation and then take sales away from their competition. So first, we are going to look at what is it that you are taking away from studying that North Star company. What is the model? What are those moving parts of what you want to translate into your operation? The second one about secondary. So how do you define those people? Because is it the cerebral search? So we're going to get into the mechanics of defining those 5 to 15, because if you target the wrong ones, you know, it's not good either. So of course, running the test is time and money and everything. So we want to make sure that you're targeting the right ones. And then what does a test look like? How long is it? What are some certain parameters that go into that test? And then finally, what does that final plan look like? So we're going to get into all this. So it's quite a bit. And anybody listening, so it's going to be an intense conversation. So feel free to pause, come back, but don't miss a minute of it because Kevin is going to tell us exactly how to do this. So with that, before we jump in, I want to ask you about the testing aspect of the secondary competition. That is clear to me. I understand. But what if there is a conflict between what that North Star company model tells you versus what that competition, secondary competition you are targeting has? So how does the model apply in those scenarios? Tell us what if there is a disconnect. How do you handle that?
What do you mean by that?
Like, for example, let's say that North Star company, you look at the product picture and it really is not a good one. As yet, they are the leader.
Right.
And then you look at the secondary competition, they have a great product, a main picture. So now, how do they connect to each other? Because they're totally different.
Yeah, so that's a really good question. I understand what you're asking now. You're still, in terms of, because when we're talking about that second tier of who you think you should be getting sales from, right? You don't know how they're choosing their product over your product. You're still taking bits and pieces from them as well. I want to make that part clear. The North Star brands, so that 1A, and I keep saying like the Nabisco-owned, Coca-Cola-owned, that's just kind of my analogy or description of, you know, the level and size of brands you should be going after. To me, when you're looking at what those brands are doing, I'm really looking for what do they have that is making them, you know, so credible that we could steal and apply to us to make us look like to a prospective consumer that we have just as much credibility as that brand, right? Obviously, we're not going to have as many Amazon ratings as they are because they've been around forever. They have money. Who knows what they did to get those ratings in the first place? It's really going to be in the content piece and the language and the SEO of it, right? So how are they portraying that they are credible? Is it by saying that we abide by this diet? Is it by saying we've been featured in this, we're approved by that, we're showing this influencer in our listing? I want to mimic that to build more credibility to my brands as emerging brands, right, who don't have that unlimited budget that they have. Now, the second tier of brands, right, that's a different ballgame, right? Because they probably have a similar budget to what we're working with. So they can't play that same game that those huge brands are playing. So you're taking different pieces from those different categories. The lower tier, it's going to be a lot more, you know, honing in on, for us in food and beverage, it'll be specific ingredients. I keep saying diets. I keep saying recipes. I keep saying, you know, that's the kind of things you're going to be taking from that second tier. That's going to be more niche, obviously, from the larger group. The larger group is how do we apply what they are portraying on Amazon to be more credible? The second tier is more like, are we covering our bases? Who's focusing on what of these brands? And of these brands, a lot of us have the same things in our products.
Okay, I understand. So it's not necessarily one is modeled after the other. What you are doing is, it's kind of like what I usually do. If I'm building a product, and usually it's software related or process, something like that. So I study all the competition and I look at the best ones. I look at anybody I know. And then I collect everything that I like and I just make it better.
Right.
So, yeah, but it has to, whatever I'm doing has to incorporate all the good things plus other stuff that they don't
right.
have. So that's what I'm hearing you describe as far as the methodology. So I guess everything comes together, the test results, your top competition or top company in the devising that strategy, right? So the final strategy. Okay, so Let's dive right into this. So as far as studying the North Star Company, what is it that are you looking for? What are some things that you take away and say, okay, this is what the findings are?
Yeah, so I think that one is a lot less tangible and metrics driven versus like what we do in the 1B tier, right? Because it's really subjective in terms of what you're looking to take from the listings and the storefronts and pricing and everything there. So I think with the North Star brands, the first thing you want to look at, in my opinion, is honestly probably the pricing. As marketers, we like to say, oh, we're positioned this way, they're positioned that way. We our voice is this. To be honest, the majority of people are buying certain products because of the price that we have. So the first way to win against those brands, right, is just like, how do we line up price-wise? Also, in terms of for us, especially in food and beverage, pack sizes, do you have single flavors? Do you have variety packs? So the price is the big one. The next one is like, how are they actually selling this unit-wise, which is different than a lot of other things on Amazon, because you could do three packs, you could do six packs, you could do a variety pack with four different flavors in it. So that's another aspect of this we haven't touched on yet, in terms of what you could take from kind of the North Star brands, is what is the price point, and then how are they actually selling the product, right? Because in a lot of cases, and I keep using beverage, but it applies for any type of food and beverage brand, you could really mimic what they're doing. And there's a reason they're doing that in the pack sizes they have, in the prices they have, right? And kind of in terms of like that realm and that category. So that's an easy win. If you see that they're doing a variety pack that has significantly higher ratings than any of the individual flavors, and you're not doing a variety pack, maybe you should start doing a variety pack. I understand I push that the hard part on the operations side and the logistics of pricing and actually setting that up, but we're able to take that to brands and say like, hey, you only have four flavors, try a variety pack. It's easier for prospective consumers to come in. They could try all the products and they could see which flavor they like best. Next time they order, they're going to get the one that they enjoyed the most. So I think, again, pricing, how they're positioning their units, and then I've said this a few times too, but content's the big one. Just seeing what are they doing from content. They're going to have much, much larger budgets. So they might have, commercial style stuff that costs tens of thousands of dollars. I'm not saying that our brands have to do that, but you can mimic that at a lower budget with user-generated content, with influencers, and all that good stuff.
Kevin, as you were talking, I was thinking, and suddenly it hit me. For studying that North Star company, a tool that you can use, maybe you guys are already using it, is Product Opportunity Explorer. So if you go to the Product Opportunity Explorer and plug in their ASIN, and it gives you, I believe as of today, they have seven separate tabs. One of them is customer insights. And those customer insights are split into two: good, bad. So you can easily go and read all the, and they even categorized and rated all those good and bad.
Right.
So categorically speaking, what is getting them the highest rating and what is getting them the lowest rating? And
Right.
but you can actually read the top comments. So right there, it's in front of you. What are they doing good? In terms of product content, you name it, it's all there. And
Right.
it's in Product Opportunity Explorer. That's a huge deal. And of course, what Amazon will tell you is look at the bad. And that's the opportunity that you can fill, right? So.
Yeah, so it's funny you say that too, because we've done that before, because in food and beverage too, you could have a million different things customers are complaining about. It's always going to be outside of quality, or like, the beverage showed up frozen, or all the crackers were smashed or whatever. It's always going to be based on taste, right? So we've used that in our Amazon campaigns. We've used things we see on competitors' ratings and comments in paid social. ads and kind of positioned assets that way. So yeah, that's another tremendous kind of area to explore and see what people are saying. And then just especially for those bigger brands and North Star brands, because usually too, if one person has that opinion, the majority of the people have that opinion.
Yeah. Okay. So let's now move on to the secondary competition. So let's start with, how do you identify those? What is the best way to pick them?
Yeah. So it's a few things. The outside of Amazon conversation is, if we are doing the retail media, if we're doing their Google, what are we seeing on other platforms that we could pull to Amazon? Because I've, you know, we mentioned this a little bit at the beginning. We do Target.com, Kroger, Instacart. It doesn't always transfer, but you know, there are cases where what we see works on those platforms works just as well on Amazon. So that's the first one, is using data from other sources to kind of figure out, you know, what, where do we start? What's the jumping point in terms of who we're going after? And then the other part, I keep saying we require them to kind of provide that 5 to 15 brands that they want to go directly after. I think you'd be surprised at how passionate some of these founders or CMOs are about their competitors and how they should be getting sales, you know, instead of those brands getting their sales. So it's the data-driven stuff from other things. And I'm talking about, if this is a brand new brand, right? It's, what have we done and what have we seen on other platforms? And in the majority of the teams we work with, and most of them created the product because they thought they were better than another product, you know, they feel very strongly about, you know, that set of brands. If it's a brand that's been running for a while, and I was doing an audit right before this, it's going back and saying like, hey, we notice you're getting, you know, of the $10,000 or sales you get, did you know that 1500 were from this product? While there's the bigger ones and the obvious usual suspects getting sales, you did have a few other ones that we saw get sales. Should we try amplifying that? Does that make sense? Is it a fluke? Is it an algorithm thing? If they agree with it, we move those ones into rotation. So it's kind of those, again, for existing brands, it would be, what have we seen in the past and what you've spent? The manual list from the brands directly, and then any data from any other platforms that we've been running on that we could transfer.
Okay. So you collect the data, and what is the data you're looking at in terms of identifying, okay, this is it, these five or these 15? All right.
Yeah. So for me, when we're talking about non-Amazon keywords from other platforms, if it's grocery, if it's Google search, whatever it is that we're transferring over, I keep saying there's the usual suspects. So for example, if you are a bamboo toilet paper company, people are also going to be searching for bamboo toilet paper on Amazon, right? We have kind of outliers on those other platforms that you don't know how they're going to perform on Amazon. For example, this particular product I'm talking about, they are very popular with RVs and with how RVs flush toilet paper and, you know, whatever that process is, which I'm not educated on. But that's something that we saw pop up on Instacart, on Google, right, on Target.com. So then we tested that out in our Amazon keyword campaigns outside of the competitor ASIN campaigns that we have running to see if that transferred over to Amazon. To me, you know, the success of it, if you're testing outliers on Amazon, for example, that RV toilet paper example that I'm giving, I just want to see that it can move volume. I'm not saying that that's going to be one that will scale the whole account. I'm looking for little tidbits like that in other data to test out Amazon. If that's going to help reach untapped consumers, great. What I'm calling the usual suspects, so if that's a competitor ASIN, if that is like your primary keyword, so like if you're gluten-free pancake mix is a primary keyword, right? Like we should be getting sales from that. Those are going to be held to different standards in my book, because the primary ones have to reach a certain return that is above the average of what the overall account is getting. Those outliers that we're finding on other platforms that we're testing out, I just want those there for sheer volume, right? If it's going to have a lower return, fine, but that's a sale we weren't going to get if we weren't including that keyword in our mix.
I see. Okay. So as far as secondary competition, what you are looking at is the keyword traffic that they have. And then that's what you are going after, right?
Yeah, most of the time. So either going directly after them or attacking the keywords that they're closely associated with.
Okay. But what I'm not clear on is what makes these, are these, let's say 10 companies, let's say I'm one of those CEOs, and you ask me, okay, give me the 10 companies. Those are the 10 companies you are studying, or are you also studying data from other sellers then to come back and suggest to me, okay, I know you said this 10, but there's also this five. Which one do you work with?
Yeah, so it's a combination of both. And the other thing is too, so we'll get that list of competitors, right? But most of the time too, in conjunction with that manual list of ASINs, we're going to run an automatic campaign going after any ASIN that the algorithm feels suits outside of our own ASINs. So we don't do branded, we don't do targeting our own ASINs. In that automatic campaign, targeting competitor ASINs, to us then, we're going to present this new list of brands they might not have even thought of, right? So what happens is we'll bring that to them and they're either go, oh, yeah, I didn't really think of that. That's actually a really good one. Or they're going to say, hey, that's really weird. We're nothing like them. I've never seen them on the shelves by us in store. I've never heard anybody say it tastes like this, whatever. But of those ones, which is great, relying on the algorithm in certain cases, see, a lot of the stuff we're talking about is manual, but in those auto campaigns, it's gold when you find that set of products that are efficiently churning sales for our brand that then we're also bringing to our clients and saying like, hey, have you ever thought about this? And then they're going to start digging into that brand even more. And we're going to figure out, again, going back to the beginning of the conversation, maybe they're positioning things in a different way. Maybe they're, saying things that we, it's a lot when you find those brands, you're figuring out a lot more things they are doing that you aren't doing versus like that list we're given. It's more like we know we're doing this, they're not doing that kind of situation. So it's a
I
lot of
see.
discovery.
Okay. So the auto campaign, so you're running an auto campaign to determine who is coming up in that campaign as competitor. And then you compare those against the list that the client would have given.
Right. So they gave us that list, right? That's a manual list. This automatic campaign, it might hit some of those brands that they talked about, but in our case, it's a lot of low quantity. It's going to find a high quantity of brands we didn't think of, but that are getting a low quantity of sales. And that's okay because we're going to see it's possible to get a sale from those ASINs. And it's going to then leave us with the decision. Do we want to move this into the manual campaign, give it more focus, and see if it's something that's going to scale the account?
Yeah. Okay. So, okay, I understand now. So you've got basically two sources of competition, one manual, one that comes out of the auto campaign that you ultimately say, okay, these are the guys that we're gonna compete with. Okay. So now let's move on to the test phase. So describe to us what a test looks like.
Yeah, so a test is again having that auto campaign running and then having the manual campaign, which is to us the ones we know for a fact based on that data that we talked about, based on that gut feeling that the CMOs and founders are going to have, right? So we have those two campaigns that we're running. As we progress and as we're spending dollars, the auto campaign and the manual campaign, obviously the algorithm is going to start allocating dollars to the ASINs that it knows is performing best, right? So the way we're determining success in those, and especially in the manual campaign is more like, hey, were we right? Right? Like it's like we're this list that we put in here, the things we saw on other platforms, does this actually transfer over? The automatic campaign is more like it's more of a product thing. Like, is this product right for like an automatic ASIN campaign? Because we have some products that are very unique. You put them in an auto campaign, it's dragging in ASINs and different. Like, for example, we have a rice brand that's. It's. I don't want to talk about it in too detail because it'll be obvious which product. But it'll pull in like ASINs of cookbooks and different things that aren't actually competitor products. So it's like there are situations where there's products where like the automatic campaign doesn't work. So like I said, that manual campaign is like, was our guess correct? Correct means that, you know, the profitability of those campaigns is higher than what we see on average, right? Especially for prospecting and all non-branded campaigns. Then that auto campaign is more like, can we rely on the algorithm to profitably find other ASINs for us? That actually makes sense. And people think it's as easy as, oh, throw up the auto campaign, great. You know, it's going to find everything for us. But like I said, there's work to be done where you're going to start figuring out, you know, is my product right for this? And the auto campaign, which gets a lot of people thinking, is my product right for Amazon in the first place? So there's a lot you learn in that testing phase, but it's all based on profitability, right? It's like, are we showing that we could be profitable with our campaigns? If we put more money into it, we could scale these ASINs or these keywords that we see are performing best.
I have a question for my listeners. Are you experiencing cash flow challenges with your Amazon business? Well, silly question. Who is not, right? So let me introduce you to Viably, a unique solution tailored for Amazon sellers and e-commerce enterprises. By connecting your Seller Central or Shopify account, you can promptly access funding along with a variety of financial tools, all for a flat fee. It's as simple as that. And for my listeners, they are offering an extra $1,500 in funding for eligible applications. Start your quick and easy application today at runviably.com/legends. And that's runviably.com/legends. Okay. And how long are these test campaigns?
So here is how I like to set things up. I like to run these campaigns for 2 to 3 months. During those 2 to 3 months, say we're taking the account over from a previous agency, we are going to highly reduce the branded terms that we are bidding on. So if you have a $10,000 budget and you were spending, you know, I mean, we see some spending like, let's say six on branded, on ASINs, whatever. Those 2 to 3 months, you know, we're going to spend 9,000 of the 10,000 on non-branded, or 9,500 of the 10,000 on it. After those 2 to 3 months, if we are spending money going after competitors, right, that you think are right, that the algorithm thinks are right, covering our bases with like the 1A primary keywords, you should see those prospective consumers, depending on the type of food and beverage product, reordering, and then our campaigns should be fueling the overall account growth. I'm really big on paying attention to the campaign performance. And then what we like to do is call it the all-in ROAS. So what is your all-in return on sales in comparison to what you're spending on advertising? That all-in return after 2 to 3 months should increase because we spent those dollars getting brand new people in the funnel to try the product. And then a percentage of those people, if you have a good product, right, should be reordering by that second or third month. So I like the 2 to 3 month test. And then from there, you know, kind of growing the account in that same span of 2 to 3 months. If it's, you know, if you're going from $5,000 in total sales to $10,000, that's kind of like your first tier. The next tier is 10 to 20, right? And then having expectations of those 3 months per each of those tiers that we're growing.
I see. And when you're running these campaigns, what is the budget that usually you like to work with?
It really depends on the brand. Like if we have, let's say we have a product or a brand that's been on Amazon for 4 months, they've kind of done advertising, they haven't cracked $1,000 in sales. We'll tell them a healthy budget to test this thing out and see that growth is $1,500 to $3,000 a month, right? Start very slowly with it. Then as we progress for that basically brand new product, we're going to increase that ad spend as we get to those different tiers of sales. Because, you know, just to get business-wise, if our fee stays the same, and you are really growing all in with your sales, and you're spending a little bit more at each tier, you will remain profitable as a company on Amazon. So that's an emerging brand. And then, you know, if it's a lot of the times when we take over accounts, you know, for brands that had agencies, and because the complaint we always have is, you know, we don't know what they're doing, or are they setting money on fire, or whatever it is. I actually like to scale things back at first. I know it's cool in the agency world to say, oh, if you don't spend 10 grand or 20 grand a month or whatever, it's not worth it. For me, I'm trying to save these people money at any cost I can while finding those opportunities to scale. So the beginning part should be, I'm going to go in there, I'm going to cut the fat, which is actually what I was just doing before we got on this call, is I was auditing and finding out, you know, this company that owns three brands, they were spending 78% of their ad spend on branded terms or going after their own ASIN. That is insane to me, right? And they're well-known products, in my opinion. So yeah, that's, you know, that's kind of the path we would take there. And like I said, there's a lot of situations where I'm going to cut things back. I'm going to look where we're wasting money. And then we will get back to where you spent, you know, before we took it over, once I feel you're not wasting money anymore. So no exact dollar amount. I think for like a brand new brand, I can give you an idea of what makes sense dollar-wise. But people who have been spending before, it's, hey, let's just take a pause here and let's see if you're really doing things right before I'm telling you to go spend more money.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's new launch versus existing. There's a big difference.
Right.
And at the same time, depending on your space. But this is, tell me if you agree with this, Kevin. I tell my clients that, look, I'm talking about launch. When you are launching, you have no historical data. You don't know. You don't know what your performance is. And by the way, the most valuable, one of the most valuable things or assets you have as a seller, as a seller central account, is your advertising account, right? Because it comes with all the historical performance that it benefits from in order to get better and better. So, and you have none of it. So you're starting from scratch. So therefore, your first efforts will be to fight for impression share. And in order to gain that impression share, you've got to make some noise. And that noise will come from money. So I tell them, be prepared to spend about $200 a day. That's $6,000 a month. So don't go in thinking, I'm going to start a business by just spending $1,500 a month and then I'll be okay. No, you won't, because you'll just bleed to death, just right, hoping. So you've got to have that kind of an approach. So would you agree with that?
I think food and beverage is really interesting because we're just getting all these brands. Like, so say it is new, right? Like we're talking about. They might not be proven on Amazon, but we'll get ones that are proven in like retail, right? Like we're talking about, or direct, like COVID, you know, everybody, oh, we're direct consumer. We want to do Amazon. Great, right? I don't have an issue with any budget because a lot of the brands, the new ones that we're starting with, going back to my conversation in food and beverage, I mean, I wish I could pull the product I'm looking at right now, but like that North Star, or the brands who we should be, they know that coming in. So even though we don't have that data, we're skipping a whole step just because they know all these things about their products from retail, from direct to consumer, from farmers markets, you know, whatever they've done before they've tried this product in Amazon. So I see faster profitability with food and beverage brands because of that reason. And like when I mean profitable, I mean, like you don't have somebody starting from scratch getting like a 0.2 return, right? You get a lot of brands that break even pretty fast in our industry just because they have, if they don't have that historical data in the account, they have it from somewhere else. And like, you know, the beginning of this call and what we were focusing on, I could test that out right away. And a lot of the times they're right, right? So instead of that $200 a day, if they come to me and say, hey, like, you know, we really only want to spend $1,000, is it worth it? 10 times out of 10, I'm going to say, yeah, because they're going to then see and be encouraged through the results that they were right that they could steal sales, that they were right that when they show up for this particular search that they get clicks, whatever it is. And then just proving that out for 1 month is going to justify them, you know, amping that budget up in a second test a month after. So I'm okay with smaller budgets because food and beverage is a little bit different. It's easier to prove out that the product works. But like I said, there are some products that are very niche that you do get that 0.2 return, and none of the things they thought were going to work are working. But the majority of the cases, you know, and the brands that we work with, it is easier to jump off because of the history they have outside of Amazon.
Yeah. Can this strategy be applied to other categories than food and beverage?
That's a good question. So I am very well versed in food and beverage, you know, and we have some CPG brands we work with, like we were talking about the toilet paper company. You know, I don't really know the answer to that one, to be honest with you. I do think that we have it easier from that standpoint of like, we know our parameters. We have it harder from the standpoint that like, we're going to have more issues with our products, right? Expiration dates. We've had, you know, Amazon shut down products for, you know, their expiration date being like 90 days out or something crazy like that, or the glass is broken when it shows up, or the can exploded because it's frozen. So we have that benefit of it's easier to jump off, but we have more issues with the other products. So I, you know, the answer to that question is I don't really know.
Yeah, it would be nice to test and see if it works. Okay, let's talk about the final plan, the devising the strategy. So what does that final strategy look like?
Yeah, so your final strategy, let's say you're an existing brand that has some history on Amazon. You've been around for a little bit. You're not brand new. You've done things in other channels outside of Amazon. We're going to set up to start and to be really smart, 4 to 5 campaigns. I'm going to do that auto ASIN campaign, right? It's going to make sure it's not bidding on our listings, because to me, that's a waste of money, in my opinion. We're going to have that manual ASIN campaign. That's your 5 to 10. So that 1B tier that we talked about of the brands you know you should be getting sales from. And then we're going to have an auto keyword campaign that I'm going to put a smaller amount of budget into. Then we're going to have a manual keyword campaign that is going to be bidding on all the primary keywords for a brand. Like I said, if you are a gluten-free pancake mix, that's a primary keyword, right? If you are a probiotic soda, that is a keyword that we're going to put in that manual campaign. And then what would be your fifth, right? And this is like a starter pack for brands in food and beverage or emerging brands. You will put a little bit on branded if you are toying around with Amazon and seeing that you do have competitors, you know, going after your product, your ASIN, your keywords. I would sprinkle a little bit on branded, but you want 90 to 95% of it going to driving prospective sales, because that's how you're going to fuel your account. You're not going to fuel your account from impressing these clients with the crazy return when, you know, half the people are going to buy the product anyway. You're going to impress your clients when 3 months down the road, they've tripled their overall sales, right? And they have all these new customers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, frankly, what's the point of bidding on your branded keywords? You should own those. You should have the Amazon choice badge. I'm talking for a mature campaign, a mature right. account. You shouldn't really have to bid on those. I don't see the point. The other thing is, there's a principle. If you are building principle in building a scalable operation, when you build a scalable operation, the first thing that you have to do is create a process that does not depend on you executing it. That's the golden rule. So right. That will scale. That means it's agnostic in terms of who does it. And at the same time, it's going to be consistent. No matter when you do it, how much, it's always going to be the same way. Now, what is the advantage of that? The advantage of that is measurability. You can measure things. So of course, you know, there are trends out there change, but they are there anyway. So if you're doing different things every time, so they are there also. So you never know anything. But if you have a process that does not depend on you and it's standardized, you can also measure its performance. And then guess what? Based on what you are seeing, you can find improvement areas and then get better and better and better. Well, what does that translate into in Amazon advertising world? Non-branded keywords.
Right.
So branded keywords are basically you as a company. That's what you bring to the table. Well, that doesn't really expand the size of the pie. It just keeps it. But these unbranded keywords, they'll expand the market size.
Right.
So that's exactly what you are doing. And it's a great strategy.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm just going to say it, sorry to cut you off, but it is sad because we, you know, we have brands that are anywhere. You go to the airport, you can see their product. We have brands that are like, they, you know, they're doing a farmer's market. Now they want to try it on an Amazon. It's sad to see, you know, the amount of dollars though, that are just wasted on this stuff. And it's easy for me to say this, but it's other agencies wanting to present to their client, hey, we got a 10 times return. How great. You know, and the client's too busy to look into, oh, great. You know, good thing. They're pouring dollars they don't have into what they're doing. They think they're getting a good return. It's not. I would honestly say 9 out of 10 times when we take over an account, that is what the situation is. So I feel very strongly about that.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, Kevin, is it's like a house of cards, because the moment that you stop those campaigns, what happens? They are branded keywords. So you haven't ranked on any of the broad, you know, based campaigns, keywords. So it just doesn't make any sense. Why do that? So, okay. So going forward, as far as testing this, I mean, the main strategy. So how about the maintenance of it? Are you adding more and more and more as you grow this account?
Yeah. So, because when you were talking about automate, that's what I was thinking of. So what we've talked about the majority of this call, right? So going after figuring out the competitor ASINs, figuring out, you know, do your primary keywords work? When you get that going, great, right? That is, and we're talking like sponsored product, like the really basic stuff that you should be doing at the beginning. And, you know, if that works, if you have sponsored product, ads going, if you have like basic display on ASINs, all of that, with those competitors, you have a solid list of competitors, you have a solid list of keywords that work both in automatic and manual, you've gotten the really hard part done. But that doesn't mean that you just sit there and let it go, right? So you do constantly have to be adding on to those campaigns, even if it's the bottom, like you're not going to be interchanging those primary keywords, but diets change, you know, we've had like, you know, in chocolate bars, especially, like just Google the things that they figured out with chocolate the past few years, certain keywords turn into a big no-no. You have to be constant with that, both in your SEO of the products, right? And then obviously also in what we're targeting. In addition, in food and beverage, there's brands worth $1 billion that weren't even around 4 years ago, right? Not a billion, but close, like the Liquid Dots of the world. So you're going to have those guys. I mean, in food and beverage competitors, they grow fast if they are successful. So you need to be ready to adjust to consumer behaviors, right? In food and beverage, ingredients, diets, you know, whatever it is. And then competitors that are joining the space or leaving the space quickly, because we also see a lot that spent money the wrong way and they're gone, right? So I would honestly argue that food and beverage is probably the craziest from that aspect, in terms of if you have your basics down, and you're profitable and it's working, that's great. But you're going to have a lot of other factors that are going to have to make this more dynamic.
Yeah. You know, when it comes to food and beverage, there is something I remember a long time ago. I saw this guy, you know, the vitamin water. So when it first came out, I remember a conversation with the guy who started that company, and they asked him, why do you feel that you will be successful because there's so many others and so many others are getting in. He said something very interesting. He said, I spoke to our customers. He said, usually when somebody gives you a drink, it's a drink, right? You refer to it as a drink. And then when somebody says, what are you doing? You say, I'm drinking this. I'm drinking Coke. I'm drinking Pepsi, whatever. See, we say drinking Coke, drinking. He says, our customers don't say that, he said. Our customers say, I am using. So he said, at that moment, we realized that we had something because it changed the language. So, you know, you really have to listen to the customer, see what the customer says, and then use the words your customers use. So that's what you were talking about in the first, you know, targeting the North Star. What is it that they are doing good? So because they've done the research, they've collected all the data. So right. It makes total sense because it's all about what the customer says. And if you can use their words, you'll be doing something good. If you can give them the words to use, now right. You've really made it. And we know the result. What happened to vitamin water, right?
And, you know, when he's saying they're using it for benefits. And every brand we work with, I mean, the majority are in the better for you space. There are functional benefits to each of these products. With those benefits means tons of different ways of interpreting it through ingredients and diets. And one person says it this way, the other person in the category says it this way. So, I mean, it's a little bit of like the Wild West in terms of there's a million different things you could take and leave from competitors and position yourself in a certain way and keywords to go after and ASINs to target. It's a lot. Food and beverage on Amazon, you know, we see it on other platforms. You know, there's everybody's looking to get something out of this. You just have to make sure you're bidding and showing up when they're looking for that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, I definitely learned several things in this call. It's a great conversation. And I know you said it's food and beverage, but I'm sure that because this is a methodology. It's a sound methodology and you're going after it. You're not exactly wasting money. It's not an expensive thing. It's just the knowledge. I would be curious to see anybody who uses this in other categories, what kind of response they'll get and the results they'll achieve. So this is great business conversation. So let's now get to know you a little bit. So clearly you are confident in this space. You've got plenty of experience. But what I'm interested in the most is how did you get here? And I'm not interested in your resume. I'm interested in where you grew up as a kid. What were your interests that are in line with what you are doing today? When those early signs, early activities as a kid, how did they connect you to what you're doing today? Talk about the little Kevin and then how little Kevin got to be the big one.
Yeah, without being too revealing. and I'm sorry to anybody who had to deal with little Kevin. I thought other agencies, I could just do this on my own. Why don't I just do this? And I've seen other agencies not put in the effort they should be putting in. And then like, you'll meet the client, you know, they're expecting these things and you're like, hey, you know, on the back end, really, I don't know how you guys are justifying this. Somebody who cares should do it. From my perspective of getting here. So my dad was in marketing. So I, you know, learned a lot just from listening to him talk over the years. My mom owned a women's shoe store. So she was a business owner. So I had that combination that I think helped a lot. And then I think just like I said, just going to the agencies in Chicago and seeing, like I started in paid social. This stuff was brand new when I came out of college. I had one college course that had anything to do with digital marketing. And it was like a brand new test class that they were trying out. So I think, yeah, like growing up, I was interested in doing something like this. Obviously my dad in marketing, my mom owning a business. I think that was interesting. And then how I got here from that point was, it was just working in all these different places, some good, some bad. And then just think it just got to the point where I'm like, okay, I could do this better. obviously there's a money incentive. I could also probably get paid more. And then I think it just builds you as a person too. I mean, you have to deal with stuff nonstop in the campaigns, business wise, industry, COVID. So I think it helps you as a person. But I mean, I grew up pretty spoiled, so I'm lucky. But yeah, that's how I got here. I enjoy it and it's fun, and I plan on continuing it for a while.
So, I mean, money is, of course, is always important, but it's never the driver, right, in doing what you do. I heard you say it a few times that this job could have been done better, and nobody was doing it, and therefore you said, I'm going to do it. So it wasn't, oh, I'm going to make millions of dollars. That wasn't the driver. It's the usual, there's got to be a better way. And then that better way for you becomes this. But also, you get into the entrepreneur ring. You know, it's being an entrepreneur is a whole different ballgame than working someplace, right?
Yeah, you see my smile.
Only entrepreneurs understand that smile. So,
yeah,
it's the roller coaster, right? It's constant roller coaster, and when you least expect it, nobody gives you any break. Doesn't matter where you are, it's always, you have to keep pushing. And also the people around you, they really need to support you. And as right. yet, you know, sometimes it could be really, you know, boring and frankly ungrateful, but nevertheless, you have to keep showing up. You have to keep not only showing up, but also figure out, like, brain at work constantly. And so I guess watching your mom run her business must have given you some of that inner strength, would you say?
Yeah, well, it just shows you it's, like, possible, right? Because, like, if you're not around that stuff, you're just like, oh, I wonder, you know, what it's like to own a business, who owns a business, how they do it. But yeah, when you see it, you're like, okay, you could do this, right? And then I think a lot of it was just like starting at a really big agency and then going to a smaller one and a smaller one and a smaller one. And then the big one, you're like, okay, you could, you know, Gatorade, which is one I worked on for a little bit, or something like, you know, one of those McDonald's, or they've got like 40 people on just like their social content or something. Then you go smaller and smaller and you see these guys doing big things with small brands. Mm-hmm. And then you see them like, oh, they could actually do it. Then I could do it, right? They're like, you know, the guy's 6 years older than me or whatever, or they're four people and I'm one, I can get to four people. So I think it's just a repetition of seeing it. And when you start, right, you're like, oh, you know, when you get your first one, you get the paycheck for it, even if it's small, like, oh, it's possible. I could actually work with somebody on my own and get a paycheck. What if I got six of them to pay me that much? What if I got six of them to pay me double? What? I just think it all just builds up. I don't know how people think you just jump into this and get paid a ton. And that's huge in paid media on like Twitter and LinkedIn. Oh, we scaled this account. We got 10% of sales. And I don't know why you would ever want to do that. I think you just got to do it step by step, right? Is it possible? Can somebody pay this? Can we do Amazon? Can we do Instacart? They just rolled something out. You know, I think that's kind of the way to go about it. And that's kind of how I realized I could do it.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, you said it. You had a working model in front of you growing up. So, right. You know, it's not an unknown to you. It's a known fact that it's been done and you just picked up naturally. It's a luxury that a lot of people don't have. Like, for example, in my family, there were no business people. They were all doctors.
Right.
And so business was never discussed. And but having said that, my father also had his private practice, as he was somewhat business minded. But as a doctor, it's a whole different ballgame. So obviously, your working model worked very nicely to give you that inner strength and the approach, you know, the methodical approach to doing things. It's a great story you have. And I don't know why you said little Kevin was troublemaker. Little Kevin turned out to be...
We won't get into little Kevin.
Cool. So, Kevin, tell us, how can people reach you, share your contact information with us?
Yeah, so we go by Goronsky Food and Beverage. My email is info at... GronskyMedia.com or Kevin at GronskyMedia.com. We're pretty active on LinkedIn. Either me personally, you know, I'll do little blurbs every now and then of stuff going on in the industry. We'll post case studies and stuff that we're a part of on our company page. So email, website, GronskyFB.com. Yeah, we're pretty much, we've got Instagram too. Like, I'll post pictures of us at shows. We're going out to Expo West next month. But yeah, just reach out. And if I have one last message to emerging brands, whether it's food and beverage or not, make sure you understand what you are spending your money on, right? Because I have seen brands spend money on things that made no sense. They're in trouble 8 months later. This is an easy thing to spend money in the wrong way on, right? So I very much encourage you, if you don't work with us, work with a smaller group who's transparent, actually has time to work on your account, you know, and make sure you understand what they're actually spending that money on. Because it's just sad to see. And I think that it's shifting more in the direction of agencies like us because people are kind of seeing the light.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. A lot of people don't know where they are spending money on. I mean, it's one thing that that people complain about, oh, it's going to cost so much, but so-and-so is going to do it cheaper. Well, it's not about what you're going to spend. It's what you're going to get for what you spend. So if you don't get what you're supposed to get, doesn't matter how little you spend, it's wasted money.
Right.
So I always say, don't look at what you're going to spend. Look at what you're going to get.
Right.
And then make your decision. And you get what you pay for at the end of the day, right?
Exactly. So,
great. Thank you, Kevin. Great conversation and great tips. I'm sure people will reach out. And thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. It was a blast.
Before I go, a quick reminder to say goodbye to your cash flow problems and claim your extra $1,500 when you qualify for $25,000 or more in funding. Go to www.runviably.com/legends and start your application today. Thank you. And this brings us to the end of another episode.
If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the episode, and share it with someone you think would benefit from it too.